The federal government is shut down, at least partially. What does this mean? How long will it last? And who are you upset with the most, if anyone at all? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. I'm Joy Cardine. You're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is coming up on 7:37 on this Tuesday, October 1st. Joining us to talk about what's going on is David Cannon, professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So are you surprised when you woke up this morning that the federal government had partially shut down?
No, I mean, it looked like we were heading that direction for some time, and it seemed like there was no way the House Republicans and the Senate Democrats were going to get together on this. And so, yeah, I'm afraid this was all too predictable.
Yeah, well, give us the lowdown here in the showdown. What were the Republicans doing?
Well, the impasse was created when House Republicans wanted to link the defunding of Obamacare to the budget that had to be passed by today, October 1st. And the president has indicated for quite some time that he won't link those two, that the health care proposal, or the health care law, the Affordable Care Act, has been put into law. It's starting to go into effect. Parts of it already have gone into effect. The health exchange is open today. People can start enrolling. And so this was something that the president just said is not negotiable, that he's not going to do anything to suspend part of that law, to delay any part of that law. And so this was just not a negotiable item for the White House and for Senate Democrats. For House Republicans, this has been, you know, their central issue since the 2010 midterm elections, that they've been, you know, campaigning for, you know, since it was passed to get this repealed or defunded. And so this is the nature of the impasse.
Yeah, let's take a listen to House Speaker John Boehner.
I talked to the president earlier tonight. I'm not going to negotiate. I'm not going to negotiate. I'm not going to do this. Well, I would say to the president, this is not about me. And it's not about Republicans here in Congress. It's about fairness for the American people.
So what does he mean? It's about fairness. He was saying that he's just asking or that the Republicans were just asking for a year delay in the Obamacare implementation, just like the year delay that large businesses got.
Well, yeah, that is the Republican position, that they just are trying to delay that part of the law, the individual mandate. That was the most recent proposal they sent back to the Senate. But I think to put this in historical context is important. There's never been an effort in the past ever to have a policy that's already written into law and was passed by both the House and the Senate, signed into law by the president, and to use the budget process as a way to undo a law rather than the normal legislative procedure. That if Congress wants to change a law and repeal a law, they can do that through the normal legislative process, not to tie it to the budget, or as President Obama and Harry Reid put it, holding the country hostage. And so that's why the president said he won't negotiate on this, is this really is unprecedented in terms of using this approach of holding the budget up to try to accomplish something you can't accomplish through the normal legislative process. And so that's the president's response to the fairness point is, look, this is not the way we do business around here.
Yeah, so if the president's not going to negotiate on that particular point, tying the Obamacare to the budget, and the Republicans are digging their heels in, how is this going to get resolved?
Well, someone's going to have to give, and my guess is what would happen is that when it's going to come to a head is in 2 weeks when we have the debt ceiling vote that has to come up. Because in about 2 weeks, a little over 2 weeks, we're actually going to run out of borrowing authority. And at that point, the government won't be able to pay its bills anymore. So that's a much more sort of catastrophic kind of event than the government shutdown. The government shutdown will be inconvenient for a lot of people. 800,000 non-essential federal workers will be laid off. There definitely are going to be a lot of problems for people who are, say, trying to get passports processed or people who are trying to get other federal loan applications approved for a home mortgage, or think so there will be real consequences for the American people, the shutdown, but it's nothing compared to what's going to happen in 2 weeks with the debt ceiling vote, and that would truly trigger an economic crisis. So something has to happen by then, and so at that point, I think that the Republicans will come up with a short-term spending measure and a short-term increase in the debt ceiling, because nobody wants that kind of economic calamity.
So are you suspecting that we'll have a partial government shutdown for at least 2 weeks until the debt ceiling deadline comes?
I think that's a real possibility. I mean, it depends on how much pressure builds between now and then, and whether or not there are a significant enough group of Republicans who go to John Boehner and say, look, we just need to get this taken care of, because it would have majority support right now. I mean, there's a majority support in the House and the Senate right now to pass a short-term continuing resolution to keep the government open. The only reason it's not coming up for vote is because there's not majority support within the Republican Party. The so-called Hastert rule that was put into effect back when Dennis Hastert was Speaker, that nothing would come to the floor if it didn't have majority support of the majority party. And so there is support right now to pass this clean, as they put it, a clean continuing resolution. And so if enough Republicans can go to John Boehner and say, look, we just need to make this happen, it could happen today if they would let it come up for a vote. And so if there's enough pressure that comes from the public, enough pressure that comes from the stories about the inconveniences from the shutdown, we could get this solved right now. But my sense is there won't be enough pressure until the debt ceiling vote in 2 weeks. I mean, I hope I'm wrong on that, but that to me is the final deadline, though, that something has to happen by then.
Well, might there not be a lot of pressure because a lot of people are not all that sure they like Obamacare? Isn't it the constituents of these House Republicans don't want the law to be implemented?
Well, true. That's right. And that's where the pressure on the Republican side comes to hold firm and to not give in to funding the government, is that they really do want to defund Obamacare. And Michelle Bachmann, for example, yesterday said she was not happy with the latest proposal to just delay for 1 year the individual mandate. She wanted to defund the entire thing. And so there are a group of Tea Party people in the Republican Party that really want no compromise short of getting rid of the bill or getting rid of the law entirely.
Well, the last time we had a partial government shutdown like this was during Bill Clinton's presidency some almost 20 years ago, right?
That's right. Yeah, it was the shutdown of 1995-96. And there were two parts of that. The longest one lasted 21 days. And there was enough political fallout from that, with Republicans shouldering most of the blame, that we haven't shut down the government since then because of the political consequences and the economic consequences of having a shutdown. But now we're in a position where the Republican Party is willing to take that potential hit because they feel so strongly about defunding Obamacare.
And current public opinion polls do show, at least with the general public, that more are going to blame Republicans for the shutdown than they would blame, say, the president or the Democrats.
Right. That's correct. Every poll I've seen says that the Republicans would be more to blame. And so the question is, at what point do they start, paying too heavy a political price that they just should go ahead and agree to get the government open again? And there is a split within the Republican Party on this, that you have, senators like John McCain who've said for weeks now that this is not a winning strategy. I mean, John Boehner himself did not favor this approach even 2 weeks ago. He wanted to allow the government to stay open by having a vote on defunding Obamacare, but then allowing the Senate to strip that part out and to have the continuing resolution keep the government open. That was his approach 2 weeks ago, got shot down by the more conservative Republicans in the House. And so there are a lot of Republicans who don't think this is a good strategy, and they do want to open the government. So my hope is at some point they'll be able to have the clean vote and to get the government running again.
We are talking with David Cannon, a professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, about the partial federal government shutdown in effect, since Congress could not agree on a continuing spending resolution, a budget resolution that contained a provision that would delay Obamacare for a year. So what does this mean? How long will it last? And we're wondering if you're upset with the Republicans, upset with the Democrats, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about the partial federal government shutdown with David Cannon, professor of political science at UW-Madison, and welcoming your questions, welcoming your reactions about what has happened and what it means to you. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Catherine in Appleton is with us. Hi, Catherine.
Good morning. Yes, this is Catherine. I've called in a couple times about this because it's so interesting how this is all being played out. Like I said, a couple things. First of all, this was in, you know, the vote, it was voted on, it became law 3 years ago. And now I guess I don't understand, you know, even after parts of the law have been implemented, why suddenly 3 years later, you know, they're now arguing about this. They had plenty of time to do this. And the fact still remains, it was voted into law. So it's said and done. Now, that being said, you know, we've got this whole government, you know, potential shutdown going on. And it's important for people to know that the act still goes on, or the marketplace is open today.
Right. And thank you very much, Catherine. That's right. We touched on that, Professor Cannon, but the federal government might be closed partially, but the health exchanges, the rollout starts today, right?
Right. And that's, I think, confusing to a lot of people is, you know, what exactly is open, what exactly is shut, and how can the exchanges be open if the government's shut? So maybe just to go over a couple of the keys or categories here of what's open, what's shut. So first of all, essential services keep on going. So the, you know, the FBI and the border security people, the air traffic controllers, all of the government workers that are essential for national security, public health, active military, they're all still on duty. Now, they're not being paid, but they will be paid, you know, after the government opens up again. So that all goes forward. Also, mandatory spending that is not discretionary, like Social Security, that continues as well. That has, you know, money comes in still, you know, with our Social Security taxes we pay in every paycheck, and so Social Security checks still go out. So, for example, in the Social Security Administration, only about 29% of the Social Security employees are actually staying home right now. Over 70% of them are still showing up for work this morning, and they're there to process the checks and make sure that checks go out. And then you have the third category, and this would be the health insurance exchanges that are partly funded by the mandatory spending, like through Medicaid, but also have some money that's already been allocated. And so anyone who has sort of reserve funds left over, money that's been allocated, can still continue to keep their programs going forward, even with the partial government shutdown. And so that's the way that a lot of the government operations on sort of autopilot and keeps on going. It's only those 800,000 workers who are either non-essential or have purely discretionary spending that's not kind of on automatic pilot. They're the ones that are staying home today.
I did see a Facebook comment from a listener who said, the Apostle Islands National Seashore, which is a part of the national park system, will be closing down, and he was not happy about that at all because that's near Bayfield and in northwest Wisconsin, and they're having a big festival this this weekend. So there are going to be some inconveniences like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So every national park will be shut. The Smithsonian museums in Washington, D.C. will be shut. And so anyone who, you know, had a class field trip going to Washington, they're going to be sorely disappointed. And so there are discretionary parts of spending like that will be completely closed. closed down. And I saw one estimate that Washington, D.C. is going to take by far the biggest hit here, to the tune of about $200 million a day they'll be losing of all the employees and then the lost tourist revenue and so on. So there are parts of the country that will be affected, you know, very deeply, and locally, Bayfield and the Apostle Isle National Seashore would be one example of that.
Yeah. So, but Catherine was saying, what's going on here? This was voted on, you know, years ago. It's passed. It's partially implemented, the Affordable Care Act. Why are they doing this now?
Well, it's not like they haven't been trying. There have been, you know, 40 votes in the House to defund Obamacare that they have passed, and this is, again, largely symbolic because they know the Senate's not going to do anything on it. And so they have not been able to accomplish defunding Obamacare through the normal legislative process, which they have been trying to do. And so this is their last-ditch effort to try to get rid of it. And because they know they can't succeed. And, you know, John McCain, again, has said the same thing. We can't win this fight. And so why are we doing it? But they still persist in trying to defund Obamacare because it is, you know, such an anathema to them that they can't, they really can't see it going into effect.
Mike in Rice Lake is with us now. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. I guess what my real concern is that we're talking about the Affordable Care Act, but Congress has had a fiscal year to put a budget together, and they haven't done it in quite a while. From what I understand, a few years.
Yeah, what's the deal with that, Professor Cannon?
Right. Yeah, no, Mike makes a great point. This is really shows a sort of a deeper problem in Congress than just the concern and opposition to Obamacare. That the gridlock in Washington runs very deep right now, that the House and Senate just can't see eye to eye on much of anything. So even something like the agricultural bill that had always been strong bipartisan support went through, you know, with almost no controversy in the House and the Senate. Even the agriculture bill died this year over controversy over cutting food stamp spending, because food stamps had always been included as part of the agricultural spending bill as kind of a compromise between the rural, farming communities and the urban communities that rely more on food stamps. That was a bipartisan coalition that put together in the past. That fell apart this year. And so Mike's absolutely right that this is a deeper problem than just the opposition to Obamacare, and that the Congress really is in gridlock mode right now. They can't even, you know, pass their budget.
Let's thank you, Mike, for the call. Kay in New Auburn. Hi, Kay.
Yeah, back in the 90s when Hillary Clinton put forth her health care plan, was it not the Republicans that insisted on the individual mandate be put in there? That was their big push to her, you know, to her plan.
I don't recall. Do you, Professor Cannon?
Well, no. I think maybe what Kay might be thinking about is where the Republican sort of idea and this plan comes from is from Massachusetts, and when Mitt Romney was governor of Massachusetts, that he had a plan in Massachusetts as a Republican governor of that state that's very, very similar to Obamacare, including the individual mandate. And so, indeed, I would agree with Kay that the Affordable Care Act is built on a lot of ideas that really were bipartisan ideas, that did come from both parties. And the, you know, a lot of liberal Democrats wanted more of a single-payer national health care plan, and that got shot down right away. And this is more of a middle ground kind of solution that still is something that's controversial, but it did have a lot of bipartisan ideas in it anyway.
Randy in Keewaskum is with us. Hello, Randy.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. Okay, the farm bill just got mentioned. Realistically, the farm bill isn't much of a farm bill anymore. When you talk about food stamps and school lunch programs, they take up 90% of the bill. 10% is farm bill now. And as far as the Unaffordable Care Act, that was a highly partisan bill passed using the nuclear option in the Senate with no input whatsoever from the Republicans. They were told by Emperor Obama, you have nothing to say in this.
Wait, Randy, we are hearing that from Republicans, that this was passed without a single Republican vote, and there was, you know, they had no input in on the Affordable Care Act. Professor Cannon?
Well, yeah, so part of that is correct, and the other part's not correct. So it definitely was a partisan vote in the House and the Senate. There was very little Republican support. That part is absolutely true. But what's not true is that this was the strategy from the beginning. This is something we hear now from Republican leaders in the House and the Senate, is that this was kind of rammed through Congress with, you know, never seeking any input from the Republican Party. Well, the Democrats tried mightily for 9-10 months through 2009, working very hard with Senator Chuck Grassley and Olympia Snowe and Susan Collins, the moderate Republicans in the Senate. Mike Baucus worked very, very hard with Republicans to try to get something that would get bipartisan support, but they didn't ever have any success with that. That the Republicans just weren't willing to really work with the Democrats on that. So when that process failed, the bipartisan process failed, then they decided they would just go ahead and do this on their own. And so negotiation always requires some give and take on both sides. And in this lead up to the passing of Obamacare, the Republicans really weren't willing to give in much. And again, to go back to a point I just made a few minutes ago, is that the plan itself is a very sort of moderate centrist plan that's based on Mitt Romney's Massachusetts model, that it was almost exactly like the Republican mm-hmm. plan coming out of the state of Massachusetts. And so this is not some wild-eyed socialist takeover of health care that is sometimes portrayed as. That I think is important to recognize, is this did have bipartisan roots, even if Randy's correct that in the House and Senate it didn't get Republican support.
We have less 30 seconds, Professor Cannon. Your prediction that what's going to happen, especially with the debt ceiling deadline?
Well, yeah, so that is the much more consequential vote coming up in 2 weeks, and so we have to get this deadlock resolved before then, because if we allow the government to default on its debt, if we're in a situation where we can't pay our bills, at that point, Social Security checks won't be going out. At that point, you know, doctors won't be getting reimbursed for Medicaid payments. We won't be able to pay our bills, and so something has to happen before then.
Thank you very much for being with us.
You're welcome.
David Cannon, Professor of Political Science at UW-Madison. Thanks to Bill Martins, Christy Taylor, Cynthia Schuster, and Robin Cherry for producing these programs. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.